The Damned Thing by Ambrose Bierce, adapted by Neville Teller.
Wyoming in 1910, remote and rural. Cattle ranchers, farmers, and homesteaders scratched a livelihood from the vast territory in which the Rocky Mountains meet the Great Plains. In 1910, Wyoming had been one of the United States of America for only 20 years. Administration, law, and order were still feeling their way forward. But already well established was the system of county coroners, set in place to investigate unexplained or unnatural deaths, which sadly were not uncommon in those rough times.
I guess I don't have to introduce myself to you fellas, but since these proceedings are being taken down in shorthand by young Billy Miller here, you got a great career ahead of you, Billy, in the Hudson Journal. I'd better get it on the record. Now, I'm Jim Scoob, that's school without the L, and I'm the coroner in this here Fremont County. Served my first term back in 1897 for 7 years, then took up the reins again 3 years ago. Well, that's enough about me. Now, you fellas are my jury, you've all been sworn in, and we're here to decide just how that poor corpse some of you discovered a few days ago met her death.
Hey, Jim, that wasn't just some corpse, that was Julie Morgan. We all knew her.
Oh, you aren't wrong there, Bob. I'll call her by her name from now on and refer to her as the deceased. Now, does anyone know what's become of Mr. Harker?
Mr. Scoo, sir?
Yes, Billy?
Mr. Harker went down to the telegraph office to post his account to the journal.
Did he now? I'm not sure I approve of a journalist getting his account into his paper before he's given sworn evidence. How long do you reckon he'll be?
The office closes at 6. It's already past that. He can't be more than a few minutes. Oh, that's him now.
My profound apologies to the court and to you, Mr. Coroner.
We've been waiting for you, Mr. Harker. This business must be finished and done with tonight.
Of course. I quite understand. I'm sorry to have kept you. I wasn't evading your summons. I went to send the journal an account of what you want me to relate here.
Well, since this court will have your account direct from you and ahead of your newspaper, I suppose I can't complain. Though I do hope that what you tell this court will be more credible than the sort of beefed-up garbage you usually dish up to your readers. I want the plain, unvarnished truth, Mr. Harker, not incredible, unbelievable nonsense.
Well, that goes without saying, even though I'm afraid the facts are indeed incredible. I have a copy of what I sent. It wasn't written down as news. I didn't think the readers would believe it, so I wrote it as fiction. I'll pass it to you before I leave the court. You may certainly include this copy in the record as part of my testimony under oath.
Speaking of which, take that Bible in your right hand and read what's on the card there.
I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God.
Right. Your full name for the record?
William Harker.
How old are you?
27.
Your profession?
Journalist on the Hudson Journal.
You knew the deceased, Julie Morgan?
I did. Very well.
You were with her when she died?
Near her. I was near her.
Now, how did that come about? Your presence, I mean.
Well, she was a friend from way back. We'd rather lost touch. And then suddenly I had a message from her. She wanted me to visit. It so happened I had a couple of weeks leave due from the paper. And we arranged for me to come and stay at her place and enjoy some shooting and fishing.
I see. Well, that seems reasonable enough.
I must admit I had an ulterior motive.
Oh, indeed. What was that?
Well, I write fiction from time to time. Stories, novels. I have 3 novels published.
I've read one of them.
I'm flattered. Anyway, part of my purpose in visiting her was to study her way of life. A little odd, maybe, a little solitary. I had a new novel in mind, and I had an idea for a character, rather on her lines.
Julie Morgan was a right nice lady.
Indeed, she was. But even her best friends would admit she was a little bit of a loner.
Fair enough. All of us on the jury would agree with that.
Quite right, Bob, and thank you, Mr. Harker. Now, if you don't mind, would you please relate the exact circumstances of Julie Morgan's death? You may use any notes or memoranda that you please.
In that case, Mr. Coroner, I'll refer to a copy of the account I have sent to the journal.
As you please.
Well, 4 days ago, Jules and I had just left the house as dawn was breaking. We each carried a shotgun. We were looking for quail. Jules said that the best ground was just beyond a certain ridge, so we crossed it by way of a narrow trail that led through the chaparral. Each side of us was a dense thicket of shrubs. We were emerging from the chaparral to reasonably level ground covered with oats, when a little ways off to the right, we heard a strange noise.
What sort of noise, Mr. Harker? Please, be more explicit.
Well, I at first thought it was a deer. I actually said to Jules I wish we'd brought a rifle. She was gazing at the shrubs and bushes waving about, and then suddenly she cocked both barrels of her shotgun and raised it, ready to fire. Oh, come on, Julie. You're not going to fill up a deer with quail shot, are you?
That ain't no deer, Bill.
What do you reckon it is, then? Oh, God, you don't think it's a grizzly, do you? Come on, we'll tackle this together.
It'll outdo the both of us, Bill. You take my word for it.
How do you know that?
We ain't no match for it.
It's gone quiet. What is it, Jules? What the devil is it?
That's just it. I don't rightly know. I call it that damned thing.
Could you repeat that, Mr. Harker?
That damned thing. That's what she called it.
That damned thing? That suggests that she knew what it was and she had encountered it before.
You may be right, but I wasn't thinking clearly at the time because I could see that the disturbance had moved in a most inexplicable way. It was no longer the shrubs, bushes, and small trees of the chaparral that were waving about, but the great field of wild oats in front of us. It looked as if it was being stirred by a great wind, but not as you'd expect.
Very vividly put, Mr. Harker. You follow the best traditions of your profession. But I think you'll have to explain yourself a bit further. What precisely do you mean?
Well, when a wind passes over a great plain of oats, the plants bend and recover. But what I saw was quite different. The oats were not merely bent, but they seemed to be pressed down, crushed. They didn't rise up again. But the terrifying thing was that this crushing motion was advancing towards us.
Mr. Coroner, sir?
Yes, Bob?
Me and the rest of us here on the jury can't quite get a handle on this.
I'm not sure I can either. Mr. Harker, what is it exactly that you could see?
I've told you, there was nothing to see except the oats being crushed, bit by bit, and the crushing getting closer and closer. I've never seen anything like it in my life. I could see no reason for what was happening. It was like the plants were being trampled underfoot, but there was nothing trampling them, and it was advancing towards us, slowly but surely.
Were you frightened?
Frightened? No, not really. Disturbed. Puzzled?
How about Julie Morgan?
Oh, now Julie? She was scared. I could scarcely believe it when I saw her suddenly lift her gun to her shoulder and fire both barrels towards the oats. But she was shooting at empty air.
A cry, you say? Like an animal in pain?
That is so, Mr. Coroner.
But you saw no animal?
No.
Mr. Scoo, sir?
Yes, Bob?
The jury here would like to know if Julie could have hit an animal when she fired her gun.
Mr. Harker?
Well, it was a shotgun, and shot goes all over the place, as you know. I suppose it's possible. All I can say is that to my eyes, she was aiming just above the oats at nothing at all, and she fired into the open air. But then...
Yes, Mr. Harker?
Then, the next thing, something hit me full in the chest, and I was flung backwards on the ground.
Something?
Some soft, heavy substance. There was so much smoke about because of Jules' two shots, I couldn't see what had struck me.
And then?
Well, before I could get back on my feet and recover my gun, I heard Jules crying out as if in mortal agony. Terrified, I struggled to my feet and looked towards my friend. May heaven, in mercy, spare me from such a sight again. Less than 30 yards away from me, she was down on one knee, her head thrown back at a frightful angle, and her whole body in violent movement, shaken backward and forward, backward and forward, and horror of horrors. Her right arm was flung up, pouring with blood, but I could see no hand.
Gentlemen of the jury, the body I examined in the mortuary earlier today has no right hand. What's more, it lacks a left arm altogether.
Her left arm was invisible to me.
Can you provide the jury over there with a few more details? You've painted a vivid picture of our friend Julie Morgan. She seems to have suffered some sort of terrible accident, which may have brought on an epileptic fit. But what else can you recall of the scene?
Well, when I try to remember what it was I was seeing, it comes to me that different parts of Jules' body kept disappearing, as if they were being blotted out. Then a shifting of her position would bring it all into view again.
You mean, what with the terrifying events taking place before you, and the smoke from your shotgun, your eyesight began playing tricks on you?
Yes, I suppose so. It's certainly possible.
What did you do? Please tell the court precisely what happened next.
Well, it only took me a few moments to recover. I threw down my gun and ran 30 yards to my friend. Before I could reach her, she was down on the ground, lying still. But horror-struck as I was, I couldn't attend to her directly, because my eyes were fixed on that same mysterious movement of the wild oats, but this time the crushed plants were retreating from the trampled area around me towards the edge of the wood. It was only when I reached the first trees that I was able to look down at my companion. She was quite dead.
Thank you, Mr. Harker. You may stand down. Now, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I had a long discussion about this most extraordinary case with our state governor. Mr. Brooks was quite insistent that the most experienced and best qualified doctor available should be contacted to assist us in determining the cause of Miss Morgan's death. He used his good offices in obtaining the services of the highly distinguished physician who has been good enough to join us for this inquest. I call Dr. Mary Kanaga Rowland.
But she's a woman!
I most certainly am. Do you have any objection to that, Mr. Foreman?
I guess not, ma'am, except I ain't never seen a woman doctor before.
Mr. Coroner, before I take the oath, would you object if I made a short statement?
Please, go ahead, Dr. Rowland.
Thank you. Firstly, folk are sometimes surprised to learn that the first woman to receive a medical degree did so more than 60 years ago, back in 1849, and that was Dr. Elizabeth Blackwell. Nor is it generally known that, though most doctors in the United States are men, no less than 6% are women. I am privileged to count myself among their number, which I may say is bound to grow very greatly in the future.
Well, the governor is sure of it. It was the governor who told me of you. Indeed, he recommended you most highly. He also said there's a female surgeon in the U.S. Army.
Perfectly true. That's Dr. Mary Edwards Walker, a great friend of mine. Well, having got that out of the way, I trust the jury is satisfied that I'm perfectly qualified to provide the medical evidence you're seeking?
I guess so, ma'am.
Thank you, Bob. Now, Dr. Rowland, if you take the good book in your right hand and read what's on the card.
I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God.
Would you please provide the jury with a brief summary of your findings?
I conducted an autopsy on the late Julie Morgan yesterday, 3 full days after her death.
The delay being due to?
The time taken for the request for an inquest to be conveyed to the governor, for the governor's commission to reach me, and for me to travel all the way from Cheyenne.
That's a fair old way from Laramie County, ma'am.
It sure is, Bob. Well, you're here now, Dr. Rowland. Please, continue.
Ms. Morgan was a healthy woman of about 30, in excellent physical condition, but even the fittest individual could not have survived the traumas inflicted on the deceased. I've rarely seen a body more damaged. There were contusions everywhere.
Contusions?
The body was extensively and very severely bruised. She seemed to have been crushed or beaten to a pulp. Her left arm seems to have been ripped from her body, and her right hand was missing. Moreover, the entire skin surface, front and back, was lacerated. In places, the skin was hanging off the corpse in strips. Lacerations were particularly severe around the throat. The wounds in that area were akin to those sustained when a wild animal, a lion or a tiger, attacks its prey.
So which do you judge the cause of death, Doctor? The contusions or the lacerations?
In my opinion, she was dead before her body was torn to shreds.
I can testify that Julie Morgan's left arm was with the body when I saw it. Her right hand was not. Has it been recovered?
I checked with the morgue earlier today. It has not.
I see. What, in your professional opinion, caused these extensive wounds?
Some sort of wild animal is my best guess. The country around here is pretty rugged. You know better than I do what creatures roam these parts.
We sure do. Thank you, Dr. Rowland. You have been extremely helpful. Now, gentlemen of the jury, we have no more evidence to lay before you. Your duty has been already explained to you. If there's nothing more you wish to ask, you may go outside and consider your verdict. Yes, Bob.
Before we do that, Jim, Mr. Coroner, as foreman, I'd like to ask Mr. Harker something.
You may certainly do so. Yes?
I'm speaking for all of us, Mr. Harker. What asylum did you escape from?
Mr. Harker, the gentlemen of the jury are inquiring what asylum you last escaped from. I put the question, Mr. Foreman, but the witness declines to answer.
I do, Mr. Coroner. But if the court is done insulting me, sir, I do have a request.
Indeed, Mr. Harker. And what might that be?
That book you have there? I recognize it as Julie Morgan's diary. I noticed you reading parts of it while I was giving my testimony.
I was glancing through it.
I should very much like to see it. May I? I'm sure the public would be extremely interested in whatever Miss Morgan might have
said. This book, Mr. Harker, will not figure in the inquest. Obviously, all the entries in it were made while Miss Morgan was still alive, and therefore have no relevance to the issue we are considering today, which is precisely how our friend met her death.
As you wish.
Well now, gentlemen of the jury, you may retire to consider your verdict.
There's not much need for that. Just give us a minute, will you, Mr. Coroner?
Take all the time you want. Ah, I see you finished your deliberations. Bob, Mr. Foreman, have you reached a verdict?
We sure have, Mr. Coroner. Just give me a minute to finish writing it out. There.
Is this a verdict you're all agreed on?
It is.
Then what have you agreed?
We, the jury, find that the late Julie Morgan came to her death by way of an encounter with a mountain lion.
Yes? Who is it? I'm just coming. A minute. Oh, it's you. Mr. Harker, isn't it? I'm giving no interviews to the press.
No, Dr. Rowland. I'm not here professionally. Not at all. May I come in?
I suppose so. Make yourself comfortable. Well, as comfortable as a hotel bedroom allows. Use that easy chair. I'll sit here. Yes, Mr. Harker, what can I do for you?
I find this a little awkward. I do hope you'll forgive me,
Dr. Oh, do stop beating about the bush, man. Out with it. What is it you want of me?
Dr. Rowland, whatever you thought of the account I gave of how my friend met her death, I want to assure you that it is God's own truth. I know the jury didn't believe me. They showed that by their verdict. And I dare say you don't either.
I'll tell you what I believe, Mr. Harker. It's perfectly clear to me that your friend was attacked by a vicious wild animal, an animal that crushed and mauled her to death. It probably severed her right hand with one snap of its jaws and almost certainly consumed it. The jury believe it was a mountain lion. I suppose it could have been.
If it was a mountain lion, then I didn't see it. Dr. Rowland, I saw no wild animal at all, and I'll swear that Julie Morgan didn't either. Jewel saw what I saw, but the difference was that she knew what it was she was seeing. She'd seen it before. She'd recognized it.
That damned thing?
Precisely. Which is why it's vitally important that I get to see that diary of hers which Mr. Skoo refused to hand over. If Jules had come across this thing before, then she must have recorded those encounters.
Are you saying that Mr. Skoo read those accounts and decided for reasons of his own to suppress them?
I suppose I am.
But what reason could he possibly have for doing so?
I don't know. Nor can anyone know till whatever Jules wrote is revealed.
But why on earth have you come to me, Mr. Harker? What do you think I can do about it?
As you can tell from what passed in court a few hours ago, I'm not in good standing with Mr. Skoo. He believes I sensationalized the truth in order to gratify my readers. He certainly gave little credence to my account of my friend's death. All that about me escaping from an asylum? I know I'd be wasting my time if I went and asked him to hand over that diary.
But you think that if I did...
You are in extremely good standing with him, Dr. Rowland. What is even more to the point, you will be leaving Fremont County tomorrow. Letting you view the diary would have little, if any, repercussions on the local community. If you were to suggest a professional interest in identifying that damned thing that Julie Morgan referred to...
Well, you've certainly aroused my curiosity, Mr. Harker.
So you'll do it?
What's the time?
9:30. Ideal. He'll have finished dinner and be relaxing with a glass of something. Just in the mood to be generous. Look, Dr. Rowland, you must ask to borrow the diary overnight and swear to return it to him before you leave for Cheyenne tomorrow. I'll wait for you here and we can go over together. What do you say?
Oh, why not? I'll get my hat and coat. Do you happen to know where the Skoos live? It's very good of you to see me, Mrs. Skoo. I'm afraid it's rather late.
Not at all, Dr. Rowland. I know you leave us tomorrow morning.
Tell me, Dr. Rowland, how do you find our one hostelry here in Lander?
Oh, it's comfortable enough, Mr. Skoo.
I must say, I feel terribly guilty for not being able to offer you our hospitality. But as you can see, the house has been virtually given over to the builders. We have one living room and our bedroom at the moment, and the next thing you know, we'll be lodging out overnight.
I'm sure the house will be quite splendid when all the work is completed.
Well, I certainly hope so. I suppose you have come to see my husband.
Don't try to excuse yourself, my dear. You know there's nowhere for you to retire to.
That's true enough.
I have nothing confidential to say, Mr. Skoo, though I do come as a result of the inquest.
That poor Miss Morgan.
Indeed. And the verdict has been preying on my mind somewhat.
Really? In what way, Dr. Rowland?
Well, I am most certainly of the opinion that Miss Morgan was attacked by some form of ferocious wild beast. Excuse me, Mrs. Skoo, if I don't go into the details. They are too horrible to contemplate. What stays in my mind is one detail in Mr. Harker's evidence.
I'm afraid I rather discounted much of what he said.
And I can understand why. But what struck me as possibly true was his insistence that Ms. Morgan had encountered this creature before. The phrase, that damned thing, sticks in my mind. I can't see why Mr. Harker would have invented that.
That poor Miss Morgan, she took the death of her wife very badly.
A good few years ago now, she closed in on herself, became almost a hermit. I suppose it says something for young Mr. Harker that he remained a friend.
That's what bothers me, I suppose. Granted that Mr. Harker is a somewhat sensational journalist. Is his whole account of his friend's death an invention? Or are parts of it true? For example, that Julie Morgan had actually encountered this creature before. Tell me, Mr. Skoo, did Ms. Morgan mention earlier encounters in her diary?
Dr. Rowland, let me be frank with you. I've looked through that diary, and its contents should not be made public.
John!
I have very good reasons, Elizabeth. It would do our community no good at all to know what it contains.
Mr. Skoo, as you know, I'm leaving Fremont County tomorrow morning, probably never to return. May I ask you to let me borrow that diary overnight? I give you my word that I'll return it to you first thing in the morning, and I guarantee that nothing in it will ever reach the public.
John?
Dr. Rowland, I'm the appointed coroner for this county. I'm one of its leading citizens. I feel a sense of responsibility for this place and for everyone who lives here. It's far from a prosperous part of these United States. The people here are industrious and hardworking, but many are poor and ill-educated. Old superstitions like belief in evil spirits, belief in the devil, die hard. I don't want to see this community riven by mass panic. They have enough of a struggle making a decent living.
Are you saying mass panic is what's likely to happen, John, if the contents of that book get known?
I fear it may, Elizabeth. All the same, Dr. Rowland, I of course accept your word. In the spirit of professional cooperation, I am quite content to loan you Julie Morgan's diary. This I can tell you, nothing in it will challenge what you testified in court as to the cause of her death.
Well, that is good to know, Mr. Skoo.
I have the volume here. I entrust it to your safekeeping.
It'll be back in your hands by 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. I can assure you of that.
September the 1st, out in the chaparral with the shotgun, mid-afternoon, I noticed Scratch behaving very oddly. He'd run in a half circle, keeping his head turned always towards the center. Then he'd stand still, barking furiously. He did this several times. Finally, he ran away into the brush as fast as he could. I thought at first that he'd gone mad. But returning to the house, I found no change in his manner. He was as normal as ever. We know a dog's sense of smell is 10 times more powerful than our own. Can a dog actually see with his nose, I wonder? Do odors produce some picture in his brain? September the 2nd. Never mind, Scratch. Is it me that's going mad? Looking at the stars last night, as they rose above the ridge that lies east of the house, I saw them successively disappear from left to right. Each was eclipsed for an instant, and only a few at the same time, but all were blotted out right along the ridge. It was as if something had passed along between me and them, but I couldn't see it. There weren't enough stars to define its outline. Oh, I don't like this. Not at all.
Dr. Rowland, this is precisely the sort of thing I saw the day she died. It's what I was trying to tell the court this afternoon.
And this was the first time she encountered it? Only, what, 2 months ago?
It would seem so. What's next?
This part doesn't seem to follow. Oh, several pages have been torn out. I do hope Mr. Skoo won't think I did that.
I wouldn't worry about that, Dr. Rowland. I should think that he has examined this book very closely. I'd wager anything he knows all about the missing pages.
September the 27th. It has been about here again. I find evidence of its presence every day now. I watched again all of last night in the same cover, gun in hand, double charged, with buckshot. In the morning, the fresh footprints were there as before, yet I would have sworn that I didn't sleep. Indeed, these days I hardly sleep at all. It's all terrible, insupportable. If these amazing experiences are real, I will go mad. If they aren't really happening, then I'm mad already.
What do you think, Dr. Rowland? Had she lost her mind? Was she imagining impossible things?
I don't know what to think, Mr. Harker. She seems rational enough. Oh, my goodness. Look at these next entries.
October the 3rd. I won't go. It won't drive me away. No, this is my house. This is my land. I won't go. God hates a coward. October the 5th. I can't stand it any longer. If I stay here alone, I will go mad. No, I've invited William Harker to spend a few weeks with me. He has a level head. If I'm going mad, he'll tell me. He'll help me.
And was that what happened, Mr. Harker?
Not exactly. I certainly found her very stressed when I arrived. But the next day we went out shooting together, and she was on edge all the time. She never told me why, nor did she ask me to help her. In fact, she seemed to calm down in the next few days.
So nothing untoward happened?
Not till that last terrible day, no. One evening we were sitting on the front porch drinking together. We'd spent more than a week in each other's company, out on the savannah most of the day, shooting and fishing together, and we were enjoying the last of another peaceful day. It seemed to me at one moment as though she was on the verge of asking me something, or perhaps telling me something. But then the moment passed. Next day...
Well, let's look at her next entries.
October the 7th. Now I understand. At last I understand. It came to me suddenly last night. A flash of inspiration. How simple. How terribly simple. There are sounds that a human ear can't hear. At the top and the bottom of the scale, there are sounds that we can't detect, although some animals can hear and respond to them. How can thousands of birds all take off suddenly together unless there's some sort of signal that no human ear could catch? How can bats fly and hunt in complete darkness? It's known that a school of whales basking in the ocean miles apart will sometimes dive at the same instant, all gone out of sight in a moment. A signal has been sounded, a signal too deep for the ear of a sailor up the mast or for his comrades on deck to discern. But what they do experience are its vibrations in the ship, and they talk of it as being like a cathedral whose very foundations are stirred by the bass notes of the organ. And as with sounds, so it is with colors. At each end of the spectrum, scientists can detect the presence or what is known as actinic rays. They represent the colors that our human eyes are unable to discern. The colors of the rainbow extend in both directions well beyond what we think of as the normal seven. Although we can't see them, perhaps other creatures can. Who knows? The important thing is that I'm not mad. I'm not mad. There are certainly colors that we can't see. And God help me, that damned thing is a creature of such a color.
That poor woman believed that some freak of nature was haunting her. We now know much more about the science of genetics than Mr. Charles Darwin. Your poor friend came to believe that some massive animal, which through a genetic mishap had been born with a coat of a color beyond the normal spectrum,
thus rendering it invisible.
Precisely. That such an animal was stalking her. It's beyond the bounds of belief.
Maybe. But it's consistent with what I saw that terrible day, when my poor friend was mauled to death by a creature I certainly couldn't see. Perhaps indeed a mountain lion.
You believe whatever you wish, Mr. Harker. There are certainly other explanations of how poor Ms. Morgan met her death. But I can understand perfectly why Mr. School would wish to prevent this diary from becoming generally known. There have been no other unexplained incidents since Ms. Morgan met her death. Why terrify people with tales of a ferocious but totally invisible animal roaming the countryside? A tale dreamed up in the brain of a woman who feared she was going mad. I shall return this book to Mr. School first thing in the morning and try to forget that I ever read it. And I trust you will keep your word to me, Mr. Harker, and also expunge this from your mind.
I will certainly honor my promise, Dr. Rowland. But as a journalist, I must make one tiny reservation. If by any chance further mysterious deaths started to occur in this county, I reserve the right to go back to Mr. Skew and seek his permission to reveal what my friend Jules Morgan has set down. If nothing further occurs, my lips are sealed.
Then I'm pretty sure your lips are sealed forever. For if that creature did exist, I reckon it was mortally wounded by Ms. Morgan.
We shall see, Dr. Rowland. We shall see.
This was The Damned Thing by Ambrose Bierce, adapted by Neville Teller. Our cast included Benjamin Sly as the narrator, Alan Lifson as Mr. Skew, Neil Crisp as Campbell, Catherine Gallup-Strom as Billy, Matt Downs as Harker, Heidi Langenfeld as Julie Morgan, Allison Anderson as Roland, and Christine Coleman as Mrs. Skoo. The Damned Thing was directed by Bailey Wolf with audio engineering by Keith Aberson. The show was produced by Locally Grown Theater in 2020.